5:30?
Yep.
Oh, not yet. As soon as it clicks 5:30, we're on. Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. It's 5:30. I'd like approval of tonight's agenda, but we would like to amend it. There is a resolution that's on your desk that we'd like to talk about that in new business. Is there a motion to approve tonight's amendment? Mr. Fay, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Approval of the minutes for April 29th. Motion by Mr. Denisha, second by Ms. Curran. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. First up is Mr. Chambers from Highway. And the resolution is modifying the 2019 budget for the Department of Highways for winter maintenance. Is there a motion, Mr. Burke? Seconded by Ms. Curran and Mr. Perkins. Mr. Chambers.
Yes, thank you. As stated in the resolution, our salt bids have been opened and awarded, and salt prices increased by $21 a ton, kind of the bad news. However, the state was paying in excess of $90 this past year, so we're still relatively low. I did anticipate that we were going to have an increase in salt with the stockpiles around the state and the Northeast being at a very low point. So what I've proposed in this resolution is to increase the revenue from the state snow and ice removal and then distribute the funds into different areas such as the machinery rental, which is the top line. The next line down is for county materials for county plowing, and the third line down in the increase appropriations is for snow removal materials for our state highways. What I plan to do is cover the increases in the 2019 budget with increased revenues from the state program, cover even county operations.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is resolution authorizing the chair to sign a contract with Barton LaJudas, DPC, for preliminary engineering right-of-way incidentals and final design for Depot Street Bridge over Deer River, bin number 3220850, pin number 775386. By Mr. Arquette, seconded by Ms. Curran. Mr. Chambers.
Yes. This project we approved a while back, as you can see by 140-2019, where we have the federal and state aid agreement. This structure is very similar to the County Road 24 project that was done in Russell. And this is the same engineering firm. They did an excellent job, actually ahead of schedule for that project. So it seems to make sense to also utilize them for this project. At this point, the funding is only through preliminary engineering, and I would be coming back to you with another approval of federal aid agreement to go into final design. And I would be stopping the consultant before they go into final design. They have to have all that in place anyway. But entering into a contract for the entire amount at this point makes the most financial sense from a contractual standpoint.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chambers. Next up is for solid waste, another resolution authorizing to fill two full-time temporary sanitary landfill attendant positions in solid waste at the transfer stations. By Mr. Lightfoot, seconded by Mr. Forsythe. Mr. Chambers.
Yes. These two positions would be used for various issues around the transfer stations, to include education to the public and for recycling and solid waste matters, and also to assist with scale operations. Typically during the summer months, we have a lot of vacations to deal with, and also some extended military leaves that happen that leave us extremely short-staffed. So this will help in this situation to alleviate that problem.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Renee? So our first resolution is authorization to fill a property tax law enforcement supervisor position in the treasurer's office. By Mr. Denisha, seconded by Mr. Lightfoot. Renee?
Okay. So this one is sort of self-explanatory, I think, but I'll elaborate a little bit. This we'll have a vacancy at the end of this month, and this position is responsible for making sure that our entire delinquent tax property auction happens and happens the way that it should, and that we're following New York State tax foreclosure procedures. And without it, we wouldn't be able to have an auction.
Questions for Ms. Cole? Mr. Lightfoot.
Are you going to fill it from within, obviously?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank
so
you.
We'll be coming back in another month
okay.
with a vacancy.
Anyone else? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Renee.
Okay. So I think you all have copies on your desk of the report we're going to give you. This is for our unaudited 2018 results. I have to spread out a little, sorry. Paperwork. The very first page is fund equity comparisons for 2013 to 2018. This excludes a couple of funds, so we'll just move directly to the second report that looks exactly like this, but there's a couple extra columns on that. The second page of this includes solid waste and workers' comp. They're excluded on the first page because they're a little bit different than the funds that are on the first, but we want to include the results on these as well. So I'll take a little bit of time to go through the fund balance results. So down at the bottom of this page for 2018, there's a section, and there's a section for 2017. I'll just go through my comparisons on those. General fund, which is always the one that we focus the most on, had an overall increase in fund balance of $7.3 million. There's several sections to here, so we'll start with the reserve for encumbrances is about $450,000 higher. The reserve for encumbrances is really, it's an account that represents our purchase orders that were not closed out in 2018 and are essentially moved to 2019. And the reason that number is so much higher is that this year there were a couple of POs that weren't closed out and they were large. One was for a bus, and then there were two POs for sheriff vehicles. So a lot of times when you order a vehicle, it takes months and months for it to come in and just didn't close out of the financials. The reserved balances in here from 17 to 18 are very similar. Now the unreserved unappropriated fund balance increased by about $6.8 million from 2017 to 2018. Some of the factors that influence that, I'll go through. There's a budgeted fund balance in contingency and unspent contingency. We had $2.7 million that were unexpended, and some of that was targeted. and some was just contingency that wasn't necessary to spend. So that was a big positive on the fund balance. Public health also had a good year. They were about $770,000 to the good, as well as the sheriff, who came in about $750,000 under budget. In the treasurer's office, sales tax revenue exceeded budget by $1.8 million. That's the gross figure. And overall, in the treasurer's office, where we carry the benefit, fringe benefit expenses, we were under budget in that group of accounts by $1 million, and $800,000 of that was related to health insurance directly. So the second column over in here is County Road. Their fund balance increased by $227,000. Beside that, Road Machinery had a fund balance that increased by about $191,000. The fund beside that is the Liability and Casualty Fund. That did see a decrease in fund balance, and that's due in part, or in largely actually, I would say, to resolutions that were appropriating fund balance for, it looks like that they were for settlements, largely. So that's why they appropriated fund balance went down. And solid waste is currently showing an increase in fund balance of about $773,000. I'll point out, though, that these are unaudited, and our auditors give us, at the end, before they leave, they always give us some adjustments that will affect solid waste for OPEB, which is other post-employment benefit expense and pension liabilities. Last year, that was about a $500,000 in total in entries, so this will go down quite a bit. And the last fund is the self-insurance or workers' compensation fund. They are adding, they're increasing their fund balance by about $752,000 compared to last year. And that, the bulk of that was for less spent on contractual expenditures, which is their claims, their claim payments for workers' comp. Do you have any questions on any of those?
On the unspent contingency, what was the figure,
There was 2.7 million. So the next sheet in your package is general fund balance sheet, and it's for 2018. It has a column on the left for assets, and on the right there's a column for liabilities and fund balance. This is just for 2018. It's more for information. If we move to the next two sheets, that's a comparison from 2017 to 18. The first sheet is comparison 17-18 assets. So I kind of highlighted, I went through and kind of picked out some of the larger variances, and I'll just go through and give you a brief description of what was going on with them, if I could. The top section here under the assets, you'll notice that cash is up 23% compared to last year, and that's really what we'd expect when our fund balance improves as much as, you know, when we've had that fund balance difference, largely that's carried in your cash. So the second note is there's about a 16% less that's under return school taxes receivable, the A280 account. It's in the next section. About 16% decrease in that balance, and what that means is more people are paying their school taxes. There were less unpaid turned over to the county this year. A little further down from that, there's under A300, it's taxes receivable pending. There's a 30% decrease there. That relates to taxes due from properties in the city of Ogdensburg. It means there's less outstanding. So that's another positive trend for us. I'd note that taxes receivable, this whole section, is down about 2% overall, which indicates there's less outstanding. It's good news. A little further down the page under the receivable section, we always kind of look at the state and federal receivable for social services. That had a 23% decrease. I just wanted to, you know, it's not that they're not billing and recording the receivables. It's really a matter of timing of when we get payments. You know, when we get payments from the state, their monthly payments are about $2 million, so there's a lot of room. So if we got payments December 31st, it would drop that balance significantly. So. We have actually, there's a book of the backup that represents it, but typically on their DSS has two claims. They do an administrative claim and a program claim, and they happen every month like clockwork. And within 3 months, the state pays those, and it's like clockwork too. So it's just a balance that is always outstanding. Sometimes they advance us money for child welfare settlements that they don't settle, so we'll have extra. This number will get lowered because they'll be giving us money in advance on those. Yeah, they're actually tied to a claim. We have a whole register that supports where, when we submitted and what it represents.
This 400 account is only social services.
That's all social services, the $6 million number.
The 410 is all other departments, money due to them from state and federal government payments, basically grants.
Well, my point, I guess the point I'm trying to arrive at is whether or not that the $8.7 million in 17 shown and the $6.6 million you have it as almost a 25% decrease. Is that decrease somewhere in the pipeline that has been billing submitted for but not yet received?
No, that would actually raise it. This is kind of the opposite. So that means they've actually paid us, and if you just take those two numbers, we received more money from the state as of December 31st this year, based on what they owed us, than what they owed us December 31st, 2017, that $8 million number. So last year, we probably got paid in the first week of January, the $2 million that's the regular payments from them. And this year, we got it in December. It's just a matter of timing on when we receive the money. It there's always outstanding and it's always revolving. Last on this page, there's a big variance under A440. This is due from other governments. This is largely a difference in what was collected in the city of Ogdensburg but not yet turned over to the county. So that 95% decrease means that, so this would be what they've collected for all years outstanding. Sometimes they get a check to us at the end of December, and sometimes they don't get us a check until March of the next year. So they had paid us the bulk of what they had collected towards our taxes before the end of the year last year.
Mr. Leader.
Please.
This. Yes. The A300 above, though, was related to Ogdensburg. So that taxes receivable is kind of like the DSS balance that we just talked about. There's a revolving amount, and that represents all tax years unpaid. And the number down here, due from other governments, we communicate with the city of Ogdensburg, with their comptroller, and he lets us know what cash they've actually received on those balances but haven't given to us. So when he sends us the check in January of this year for that $5,000, this will decrease, and the number up above will actually decrease too. Okay? And I said that wrong, but I'm not going to correct it. So the next page is a general fund balance sheet comparison. It's liabilities and fund equity. This is the other side of the coin. So this one's my favorite of the whole presentation, next to the fund balance one, maybe.
Mine, for sure.
Right at the top section under total accounts payable, revenue anticipation notes payable, if you'll notice in 2018, there's nothing there versus the $5 million that we owed last year. So that we paid off the RAN on August 31st of this year, and it was not renewed, and this is where it shows up in our reports. A little further down the page under A630, there's a 93% decrease on the due to other funds. And This is an account that we use regularly at the county. Due to other, we have a due to other and due from other, and this is as it relates to the general fund. So a balance here means that the general fund owes another fund money. And it would, it's really just it's a mechanism for how we fund our accounts payable or our payroll. And on occasion, we receive funds in the general fund, direct deposited to general fund that belong to a different fund. So this is how we record that we owe another fund money. So this just means that this year, the timing of things worked that we either transferred those deposits out or we didn't get anything on December 31st that we don't have time to transfer to, say, Highway. Highway's a good example. All of their payments from the state are deposited by New York State into our general fund checking, and we record that they're due to County Road. And when we move the transfer, we reduce this amount and transfer the funds over to theirs. So, and we do that very regularly. We usually do it the day, but we're a day behind when we see our cash come in. So if something comes in December 31st, we don't see it until January 2nd because we have January 1st off. So we can't move it backwards in time. We can do a lot of things, but that's just not one of them. Okay, a little further down the page is deferred revenues. They had a decrease of 26.72%. This is largely related to community services, and it's about the timing of receipts from New York State, again, and booking earned revenues. The community services, the state advances state aid before we've actually claimed it, so they send it in advance, and the money is recorded here because we haven't earned the revenue yet. So once community services has spent the money or written checks to the pass-through agencies that some of them receive this account is reduced at the time of that. So it's reduced because we can at that time book the revenue. So we'll move it into the current year budget. Otherwise, it sits here until we've earned it. A little further down the page, 821 is the reserve for encumbrances. That had almost an 85% decrease. And again, we just talked about that actually on the fund balance page. Those are the rollover purchase orders or their outstanding POs. This is the account that kind of shows you this is where those balances sit. So this matches on the front page, it matches the reserve for encumbrances, I think. Okay, you have it right there. Okay. I was trying to think of the title of it. The last number, I guess, of note that I noted on this page was A889 miscellaneous reserves. They're up slightly, and if you are so inclined, or I actually have a breakdown of what these balances are, there's about 7 or 8 miscellaneous reserves that the county has had for some time. There's a breakdown. It's actually after the budget section of the reports. So in your packages. And that's what I had here. I don't know if you had any questions. Any other questions on the balance sheet?
Any questions for Renee and Debbie?
I've got more.
You have more.
just on this section.
Okay.
Then if you don't have any questions on the balance sheet section, I'll turn this over to Deb. She's going to talk about the budget.
Okay, the next page, the first page is a department budget performance report. The first page is a summary, so it gives you by department their adopted budget, the modified budget, and then the results for the end of the year. The top section is only general fund, which is fund one, and that's the main tax collection fund. So this gives you details by department. You can see how each department did. You can see in the gray totals that the transfers, that's the transfer between general fund and county road, is separated out to make things clear. And then there's total appropriations and total revenue, and that is only for the general fund. And you can see that there was a significant drop, over $10 million of appropriations actually spent compared to budgeted. And to match, the revenue is less. Many reimbursable expenses, if you don't spend it, you don't get it back. So we would expect to see a reduction in the revenue also. When we get to the details, you can see that many of the departments actually had increases in revenue, thus the positive performance. The bottom section, other funds, is Fund 3, the county road, road machinery, solid waste, workers' compensation, and liability casualty. They all start with a zero budget. They're not anticipated to cost the county any money. They're not funded by tax dollars. And then there is modifications if they need to take money out of their fund balance to pay claims, to pay expenses, and then their net result goes back to their fund balance. So that's why they all start with a zero. The bottom line, which is talking about favorite lines of the whole report, is the capital project fund. Fund 6. If you recall in any past financial reports, the capital project fund has not been reported. The balances in our financial system from the beginning of the program, I don't think they were understood how they worked. We've been working through identifying, we're tracking capital projects, but not within the financial software, and that's now all been fixed. So there's a list of projects that matches this amount that we'll be updating you on a regular basis. So that's a real step of progress. Any questions on the summary? The detail report, which is the next one, would answer many questions. It's the same numbers, the results by department, but a detailed report. So it gives you by department in the categories. So there's salary, equipment, contractual, and fringe benefits for each department. And if a department, like the treasurer's office or county road, has debt service, the debt principal, the debt interest, and inter-fund transfers are all isolated. So you can see those kind of transactions separate from their day-to-day expenses. A special line on this report for each department, the fringe benefits are estimated and charged to each department based on their number of employees and the estimated cost. The actual costs are paid out of the treasurer's office. So when we pay the bills, it includes the cost of retirees and any higher or lower costs from our estimates. And that's what's called undistributed fringe. Many years ago, it was recorded on paper to the departments directly, but it made it hard to figure out how the departments were performing. So it's not done on paper any longer or in the financial system. We've added it to this report so you can see what share of those undistributed fringe benefit costs, for example, Board of Elections would be $74,516. It gives you the true county cost of each department, which includes, like I say, the cost of retiree benefits and any over or under cost of fringe benefits. So that goes through the top funds combined are all of the funds combined together, excluding capital projects, the WIOA project, and NYPA. Those are not included in this report. Any questions on any of these? It's a lot of information, and this is about as down in the weeds you can go, and it's, it kind of explains the results on the other summary pages.
Mr. Forsyth.
Yeah, thank you. On the miscellaneous reserves, I know what the Ford La presentation one is. I know we haven't contributed, I think, since 2010 or so. But what's the stop DWI reserve? What's that used for?
Go ahead.
This reserve has been established. You can tell it looks like it was in 2014. I believe it predates both of us, but my understanding of it is that any money that is residual in that Stop DWI program, every year we do a calculation of their expenses for Stop DWI and their revenues versus that. It needs to stay in the program. So they typically receive more money in revenues. So the net amount of the year-to-year results within that program are moved into this reserve.
But
doesn't go to fund
It doesn't go to county fund balance. It's assigned fund balance for the specific purpose of using it for this reserve.
Okay, so in 16 to 17, it reduced by about 100,000.
We funded a position, I believe.
Did a resolution to use some of the funding for a position.
For probation. It's for
the DWI fines that need to go specifically to DWI.
Okay. All right. I just didn't remember hearing about that.
Yep. Okay. Anyone else?
The very last page, so that was the breakdown of the miscellaneous reserves. The very last page is just an update on our property tax collection rate. We provide this every year there. It's been pretty consistent, and it's a pretty solid number. It's 90.34%.
Mr. Burke.
In contingency. As far as fund balance.
Okay. Lastly, I'll just mention I emailed the May sales tax to you all this morning, I think, late morning. And on Google Drive, there's also the March bank rec summary as per our bank rec policy.
And I would just mention that the Treasurer's Office has not missed a month since that policy was adopted and providing you with that information. They've been doing an outstanding job.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Renee. Then. Okay, next up, County Administrator's Report. We have a resolution authorization to fill the delivery clerk position in the Board of Legislators for the print and mail room. Motion by Ms. Curran, second by Mr. Leader and Mr. Sheridan.
Thank you. This position has become vacant as a result of a promotion. You're all familiar with Mr. Casera's recent retirement. We have promoted internally. We have moved the delivery clerk into the print and mail supervisor position. As you know, that's a tested position, which hasn't been tested in decades, so that will be coming up. But in the meantime, we'd like to fill this position, obviously provisionally, so that we can accomplish the tasks of both the print shop and the mailroom. It's also my understanding, I'll just mention, that at the next vacancy, I'll be bringing forward another vacancy there, which makes this one all the more important to fill.
Questions for Mrs. Doyle? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
And just a couple other items I wanted to mention. Next week, there is no meeting as the county is closed in recognition of Memorial Day. And tonight, we will conclude the department presentations. And I want to thank you all for participating in 25 departments and 13 special topic presentations for an overall 38 individuals and their staff have come before you to provide you with information on what they do. And particularly tonight, you're going to hear from the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act. And the reason that becomes very relevant is next month at Finance, we'll be bringing you the budget to vote on. And so I'm hopeful that you'll be able to link all of the information that you've gained when we move into August and September with the budget process. So I thank you for that. Do want to mention that the website RFP has been returned. We have two who have submitted RFPs for that project. So we'll be moving forward with the selection committee. If there's any legislators who want to participate, please let us know, and we'll include you in those discussions. Also, the solar RFPs that you'll recall we put out to look at adding solar arrays to our landfills, did not see any RFPs returned on that as well. So we'll be having some internal discussions and certainly bring to you what our recommendation is, if there are some other areas we should explore or what considerations you may want to think about going forward with that. New York State today has declared a state of emergency in the 8 counties surrounding Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence River. That includes St. Lawrence County. So there are discussions mostly surrounding no wake zones. And so I know that Keith Zimmerman took a ride up today. He was going to head back to give you an update. Depending on that, we may be talking with Chairman Lightfoot about issuing one for St. Lawrence County with some recommendations. So I wanted to keep you apprised of the interest on that front. Last weekend, Chair Lightfoot and Legislator Arquette participated in the Armed Forces Day Parade in Watertown, in part of the Great American Defense Community's efforts that are moving forward. They had a great day in Watertown, recognizing St. Lawrence, Lewis, and Jefferson counties. I have received a capital request from the St. Lawrence Historical Association, and I'll be meeting with one of their board members tomorrow to go over that request. Typically, we would bring those through the budget process in the fall, but understanding what the intent is, as you know, there's been some recent personnel changes there. To understand who will be moving forward with that capital process, I'd like to find out and be able to bring that back to you. Also, the Board of Legislators is the appointing authority for the county historian, so I've requested to be a part of that search committee that they'll be conducting, which you've seen in recent weeks in the media, and bring that back to you as well. And I expect they have appointed an interim as well as interim clerical support there, but they'll be moving forward with the search. I will be bringing you a resolution on the June 3rd board meeting with a recommendation for a public defender. And finally today, the audit committee met with Drescher Malecki for the entrance meeting for the 2008 audit, of which you heard the unaudited results tonight. So they will be here, I believe, the week of June 10th and June 17th. So if there's any areas of concern or specific items that you'd like to make sure they are aware of, you're welcome to stop in and meet with them. They'll be, I believe, across the street or courthouse. But they'll be on site, so we'll make sure that if you need to meet with them, we can get some time with them as well. Any questions?
Mr. Forsythe.
Ruth, back to the St. Lawrence River and the no wake zone.
Yes.
That's been a popular phone call of mine the last week. Joe and I had a couple conversations about it. The ships are doing a great job. They're traveling, just barely going right down, but it's the cabin cruisers. And 300 foot, a lot of them say 300 or 1,000
foot. Jefferson County as well.
It doesn't matter because they're traveling down the channel and they're still creating the same amount of wake. The wake doesn't get smaller as it goes further down. And that's a huge culprit. Yesterday, three went by while we were up to camp, and the waves on them were bigger than ships. And I've got a dock that's hanging on by a thread. A lot of people got a dock that's hanging on by a thread.
And camps.
And people are saying, how do we get them to slow down? And I know it's a fine balancing. People want to enjoy the river, but actually it's probably the most dangerous time to be on the river right now with everything floating down there. But there's got to be some sort of balancing act. And I don't know who dictates a no-wake zone. And Canada would have to reciprocate.
Yes.
So, you know, but we ought to be looking into it because there's a lot of people screaming.
Yes,
I know.
There are. We will.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No questions for Ruth? Okay. So next up, we have a department orientation for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. We have Penny Taylor.
Welcome, Penny.
Penny Taylor, and I work at the One Stop Career Center located in the Human Services Building. I do mostly fiscal, and I supervise the 6.4 federally funded county employees that work there. We are an employment and training program that helps both job seekers and employers, and we help job seekers access employment, education, training, and support services, and we match employers with the skilled workers they need to stay competitive. Our main funding source is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA. WIOA is a federal legislation. It is funding for WIOA is administered by the U.S. Department of Labor. It supports states' workforce systems and programs. WIOA seeks to improve services to both job seekers and employers by aligning programs, services, data collection for adults, youth, dislocated workers, and adult basic education participants. WIOA's focus is to increase employment, retention, and earnings of participants. The federal government provides funding to each state for workforce system programs covered by WIOA. The states then allocate a percentage of the funding to each local area. The allocation is based on a formula that uses items such as unemployment rates, economic conditions, and size of the workforce. In order for the county to receive funding, two things must be in place. There must be a workforce development board, and there has to be a comprehensive career center. The Workforce Development Board, or the WDB, is a policy-making and oversight entity that serves as a connector between the Department of Labor and the Comprehensive Career Center. For each local Workforce Development Board, the chief elected official, which for St. Lawrence County is the board of is the chair of the Board of Legislators, appoints the members to the board. The board consists of 23 members, and 51% of them must be from the business community. The Workforce Development Board provides several key functions in which St. Lawrence County has an agreement with the board to perform. WIOA requires that each local area must have one comprehensive center that provides access to physical services of the core programs. In addition to the core programs, for individuals with multiple needs to access services, there are partner programs that are required to provide services through the Career Center. Currently are the New York State Department of Labor, AccessVR, OTDA, and the Department of Social Services TANF unit. The Wagner-Peiser DOL staff, or the unemployment staff, under WIOA are required to have a physical presence in the Career Center offices. In addition to the one comprehensive center, which is the one-stop career center, a local area may have additional affiliate centers. The DOL offices in Augsburg and Messina are the designated affiliate centers. The one-stop operator coordinates the service delivery of the required one-stop partners and service providers. The current agreement between the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Legislators states that the Senior Employment Coordinator will take on this function. There are monthly meetings held with the partners. The ultimate aim for the one-stop operator is to manage an internal communication system among the partners that will ensure that the customers are able to navigate the network easily. The Department of Labor has a policy for state and local areas on performance and assessments of six goals for the core programs. These goals are called the primary indicators of performance. The goals are set for attaining and retaining employment and increasing earnings. The intent of the performance goals is to promote a more integrated programming and accountability at the state and local levels and help align objectives across the core programs. When looking at this slide, the information here goes through December of 2018. That would be going our second quarter of our program year. The first column where it says goals, those are the goals that New York State has set for us to meet. The percentage of goals is where we met those goals. The state considers achieving 80% of those goals as satisfactory, and as you can see, we exceeded that in all categories. For calendar year 2018, our total revenues was over $1.4 million. Expenses incurred for 346 participants. Our largest number of participants were adults and youth. For program year 2019, we are receiving an increase in funding of about $207,000. Many of our participants are either placed in classroom training, work experience, or OJTs. Our two main providers of classroom training and occupational skills training are BOCES and SUNY Canton. Our work experience and OJTs are with area businesses throughout St. Lawrence County. Our summer youth employment program is funded by TANF. It runs from May 1st to September 30th. The staff work with both in-school and out-of-school youth between the ages of 14 and 24. Applications were sent to 18 different school districts. They were also sent to Community Connections and Crossroad programs in BOCES Tech Centers. Last year, we received 331 applications, interviewed 275 potential participants, and selected 158 to participate in our program. The counselors go to each location and interview the students to determine eligibility and what their interests are. The staff placed participants in 76 different work sites across St. Lawrence County. The participants typically work for 5 weeks starting after July 4th through mid-August. There are various other activities that the One-Stop staff are involved in. There were numerous recruitments that took place at the One-Stop in 2018. The staff attended various job fairs, conferences, webinars, and advisory meetings. Another thing that we've been involved in are called rapid responses. We will partner with DOL to provide these. Rapid responses are designed to provide a proactive response to layoffs and plant closures by quickly coordinating services and providing immediate aid to companies and their affected workers. Most rapid responses take place on site. We accommodate any work schedule and assist with companies and workers through this transition. The One-Stop can offer assistance with resumes and filling out job applications, career counseling, job searching, reskill or skills upgrading, and job training. The federal government has funding available when layoffs or plant closures are the result of foreign trade called Trade Act Assistance, or TAA. The company must file a petition and have the petition approved by the Department of Labor before any employees receive the TAA funding. If approved, the funding could include job search allowances, relocation allowances, wage subsidy benefits for workers age 50 or older, training services, or trade readjustment allowances. Another activity that we have been working on is our current endeavor of trying to address the shortage of drivers with CDLs in St. Lawrence County. The process started in June of 2018 with a meeting that included our senior employment coordinator, the St. Lawrence County IDA, other partner agencies, and local area businesses. Since the first meeting, the One-Stop has assisted in putting together a job fair at the Crest Center that took place last September. The curriculum has been developed by the Crest Center and has been approved by New York State. The instructor has been hired. DOL has approved the class as an allowable expense, and the Crest Center is in the process of applying for funds to purchase a truck. The first class is anticipated to start this summer. The programs we offer are making a difference in many people's lives. The programs make positive changes that benefit St. Lawrence County. Our participants, which are mostly St. Lawrence County residents, are learning and gaining the skills necessary to be more employable, which in turn helps them increase their earnings. Then they spend those earnings in St. Lawrence County. The employers are getting the skilled workers they need to stay competitive and stay in business.
Very good. Okay. Questions for Penny? Tom, would you like to add anything? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Just like all the rest of them, right?
Just a plus, there's a bonus because you were at the 10-minute mark and everybody else was over.
At 11. They were 11.
At 11? Better yet. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Per person, yes.
Amnesia. I don't remember that.
Okay, so next up are committee reports from Cornell Cooperative Extension Board, Mr. Denisha. You can use up what Penny didn't use up from time. I think you got a half an hour.
I'll be brief.
You'll be brief. Okay.
Cornell Cooperative Extension Board held our organizational meeting on Thursday, January 17th. And Mary Lou McKnight was elected president. Dan Kent was elected vice president. Anne Marie Snell, vice president, secretary, and Patricia Gilbert, treasurer. Ron Burke was appointed to fill a vacancy at the organizational meeting. It was created by, well, we had a member that resigned, Jeff Hill. And I can't seem to avoid this, but when we talked about committee appointments, I was appointed to the Facility Operations Committee. And I was glad because we've got a lot of construction going on, a lot of improvements out there, and that's right up my alley, that sort of stuff. There was a board orientation meeting scheduled for Tuesday, March 5. I'm not sure. I wasn't there because I was out of commission, but hopefully some folks took advantage of it. Our last meeting was Tuesday, March 26, and we have a meeting scheduled for next week on the 28th. Just a quick thing on the Harvest Kitchen. I'm sure folks have heard about the Harvest Kitchen, but if you haven't, it's a platform for food-based development. We've had 405 program participants since it started. And it provides participants with technical training and technical assistance. And there's actually 21 farmers that were engaged as well in regards to value-added food processing. There's a, actually it's what's going on right now. There's a public forum on ticks and tick-borne disease at the Extension Farm right now. It's preventing Lyme and other tick-borne disease. It's a free event. And the last thing I've got is that there's something I think will be of interest to everybody, and it's not until September 14th, which sounds like a long way, but it'll be here quick. And it's a harvest tour. And what it is, it's on Saturday, September 14th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's a self-guided tour, and it'll be able to go to different producers, different farmers. And if anyone is interested, you can contact Mackenzie Farmer, and she's the local foods marketing coordinator. And her email address is mlf236@cornell.edu. Or you can reach her by telephone at 315-379-9192, extension 231. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Denisha. Fish and Wildlife Management Board. Is that Nicole? That's you, Rita? Okay. Are you also the Fisheries Advisory Board? You're not? That's Nicole, and she's not here. Governor Fair Board, Mr. Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Fair Board meets monthly. They meet in the White Building on the fairgrounds. I've been attending, and I have to say, I will admit that I underestimated the amount of work that they do. I was absolutely astounded at how many things that I would normally take for granted that they work on. A couple memorable things were trying to determine the pricing for the shows that they've booked, the scheduling of the shows and the entertainment. Another thing that happened was they get funding from New York State, and the Department of Agriculture wrote to them indicating that they thought it would be better not to have vendors selling the Confederate flag, and suggesting strongly that they not do that. And I can tell you, it was a meeting I thought would be quite calm, and it was very, there was a lot of emotions on both sides as to whether or not they should accept the money from New York State or try to comply. So they ended up, they're not going to be selling the Confederate flag. But they're a very, very good group of dedicated, hardworking people, and I anticipate a lot more will be happening as they approach this year's county fair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Leader. Highway, I believe that's you, Mr. Denisha?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
First meeting of the year was on Monday, February 4th. And at that meeting, we reviewed equipment requests for the solid waste department. And Mr. Legault informed us of the two household hazardous waste events that were going to be held for St. Lawrence County. The one was this past Saturday at the Human Services Building, and the next one is scheduled for Saturday, September 14th, again at the Human Services Building from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The other thing we discussed was the at that time, it was a potential loss of $540,000 from extreme winter recovery, but now it's actual loss that we were not going to receive in the 2019 budget. And what that equates to is approximately four less miles of highway paving that will occur. We met again on Monday, April 15th, in for the main. Main reason was discussion on proposed facilities for outpost locations, which is each one is about 10,000 square feet, six truck bays, and we obviously brought the recommendation to the full board, seeking a resolution for an RFP for engineering and design, and that was passed. Thank you very much. And Just a note, something that Mr. Chambers told us about then was an average of 25 to 30,000 tons of sand per year and 11,000 tons of salt. I did not realize it was that much. It's huge.
Thank you, Mr. Denisha. Mr. Reagan.
Seminar to that several years ago, we resulted in bringing access to the Ogdensburg Industrial Park. They're also working with the city of Ogdensburg to fix up the dual building and hope to begin marketing it later in the year. In DeKalb, they completed assistance to Corning on a $13 million addition. This is just the latest of four projects the IDA has completed with Corning over the past 5 years, which has added 75,000 square feet to their facilities over the past 5 years. During that period, employment at Corning has grown from 200 employees to 260 employees and resulted in a total of almost $70 million investment at the DeKalb plant. In Fowler, obviously, they worked very closely with Empire Mines, which last year resulted in a $30 million investment there and $2 million in exploration this year. In Lawrence, they, the town of Lawrence, they worked with North Country Dairy to add a $3.5 million expansion that brought in 20 new jobs and tripled milk purchases from area farms. The IDA helped arrange a $1 million loan with North Country Dairy. In Canton, they worked with Parker Maple to expand this operation, the IDA's building, and help make it possible for them to obtain that contract with Walmart. The IDA's also worked heavily with City Canton and several others to develop the commercial driver's license program that the workforce investment board talked about a little while ago. They're also coming to write a grant to the World Water Commission for funds to buy a tractor trailer to help assist with that program. In Parrishville, they worked with Adirondack Fragrance Farm, which has paid off its loan to the IDA. In Starter Lake, they obtained a $211,000 national grid grant to help with the cleanup and obtained a $750,000 loan from the Development Authority of North Country to provide cash flow for the cleanup. In Messina, they worked with ProSport Trailer, which is a small manufacturing company that's over in Messina. It's a small firm, but it'll be in the industrial park and will create four jobs. In Messina, they also provide a loan to Amtech Yarns. In Messina Industrial Park, the health company acquired their building. In Messina, they've also worked with Fogler Industries to assist with a lease agreement for the company. Earlier, a few months ago, they held an event in Montreal with the Consul General to talk to companies that might be interested in moving to St. Lawrence County. They're working with federal procurement officials to provide information to local companies that might want to sell to federal agencies. And last month, they helped with the Prison Task Force Group, which luckily we don't have to bring into existence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reagan. Recreational Trails Advisory Board. Is that you, Tony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I cast my breath for Mr. Reagan's speech. I don't think he took a single breath.
Yeah.
Very well done. Yeah. I'll try to be quick. Next up, Mr. Sheridan. Met earlier today with Trail Coordinator Dr. Christie along the Don and Andy from the highway. The Trail Board is concentrating right now on the center section of the trail, which involves we have some fairly good cooperation with the DEC on making some headway in that regard. And, we will continue to put more time on it. And I prefer either one or the other.
What's that? Thank you, Mr. Arquette. RVRDA, Mr. Forsyth.
You got them all, I think, on my list. But I enjoy this group, the RVRDA, it's a good group to work with. We've made some progress. Jim mentioned Amtech Yarns. That's a Cornwall firm that bought Lot 18. It's a lease purchase. They added 3,600 square feet, did some major renovations. And all these buildings will eventually be taxable properties. So that's the part I like about that. The Pro Sports Trailer, it's a young guy. He runs the trail sales out in Potsdam. He also has a car dealership up in Malone. We approved $45,000. He wants to start manufacturing lightweight aluminum trailers, right in Messina. So that's another interesting one. Jim mentioned again, we closed on an $800,000 loan. A lot of the loans we'll do, they're like a bridge loan. The IDA will be part of it, and we'll take a part of it. We took a bigger chunk than the IDA on this one, but it's $1 million, and that's the yogurt plant. They're making a new line of Greek yogurt. Just about every yogurt, no matter what the name on it, there's a huge percentage that are made in North Lawrence. I think it's got the NN signia or whatever on it, and that says it's made in that area. LC Drives, another unique one. LC Drives is a guy from Clarkson. There's a bunch of Clarkson guys. I think there's 19 of them over there. And they're making an electric motor, which is smaller and produces 4 or 5 times the power of an equivalent motor. So, and it's all by cooling. They took the electric motor, which has been around for 100 years, and reinvented it and made it cool faster, so they need less area to produce much more horsepower. And he may have just hit the home run with his outfit. So he's done well. Sandy Main, little business, does Adirondack flavor and fragrance. Last May, we approved the loan. I think it was $45,000. She said it'd be a short-term loan. April 6th, she paid it off, paid in full. So she's doing well. As of the first quarter of this year, our loan portfolio for the RVRDA is $4.5 million, and there's about $400,000 more approved that just hasn't been distributed yet. Now is the time for the Community Development Environmental Improvement Program. That's part of the RVRDA. I think it's 5% of the total fund annually is for small towns, libraries, different things, community projects, walking trails, a lot of things in St. Lawrence County have been funded through this. We limited it last year down to $100,000 and no more than $20,000 per project, just because eventually it would have run out, this money would run out, and we think that lending to these businesses and startups and things is a little more important. But there's 16 applications. Total projects is around $294,000 worth of funding. Bassmasters will be in there and some of the others. But so that's on the project. They're evaluating them, and we should be making decisions probably in the next month for where those loans will go. But there's some interesting projects out there. But yeah, they work very well with the IDA. When I first started 5 years ago, you know, I wasn't a true believer in what the IDA does. Patrick Kelly has swayed me. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. Next up is St. Lawrence County Chamber of Commerce.
Ms. Arquette. We can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend the last meeting because I was at an intercounty meeting. But I did speak with Brooke this week, and she really wants to push the tourism award center that they're having, and she would like me to extend an invitation to all the legislators. So that meeting, or that award center, is on June 5th. It starts at 4:30 and it goes until about 8:30. The dinner itself starting at 6 o'clock. And if you go to the website, you can RSVP. And she's asking that you think about the local businesses that support tourism and nominate which business you really would be. Did you hear that?
We did. Is that all? Are you finished?
That is all I have.
Okay. Thank you.
Next up, Soil and Water. Mr. Burke.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, just to add to that, many of these projects for the ag-related are for clean water, clean air, primarily water, and usually it's 75% funding, and the farmer picks up the 25%. And so they've been very instrumental in for farmers to be able to afford to comply with the new it actually goes back to the Clean Water Act of 1970s, which is actually being fully implemented. So the farmers have been part of this process through New York Farm Bureau and other agencies in negotiating and actually talking with the DC to make it work. And it's been actually quite effective. So, and then soil and water is very instrumental in getting these monies. I mean, we're talking projects, $300,000-$400,000 for, complete contained manure facilities and managing the silage leachate off of the trench silos, the bunker silos that you see. In the past, in relationship to the forest, back when I just got on the board in 2011, we were hard up for money, and we were actually asking the forester to come up with a revenue plan of actually that we could receive. I think we're budgeted for $48,000 a year. And what the Aaron, the forester, has found out is that the inventory that actually was supposed to be on the parcels that he has looked at is really not there. They're either undersized or based on the stumpage that's there. The inventory is not there. So we'll be coming for a resolution that hopefully will have your support that will basically manage the forest for the good of the forest. And we can we'll probably have to be not expecting any revenues for some time, but at the same time, it'll be a bigger payoff when the material is right. We don't want to damage it. So I think that's something we can consider. I believe that will be coming forward in finance.
So with regard to what Legislator Akers was talking about, the number for a long, long time was $48,500. And a couple of years around 2014, 2015, it went up to $77,000. And I think looking over the five-year average, in that year we did make it, but I think as our forester Aaron Berger is reporting, we're suffering from that now. So he's taken the time to go through. I would also mention that we've gone through probably the better part of five or six foresters just because they come to work for us and then they go on to DEC, they go into other opportunities. And so we haven't had someone in that position for a long period of time to take a look at these things. And so our five-year average is about $60,144.60. And I think the material that's been left there is something we're going to pay for a lot longer than $60,000 would go. So I think we'll talk that over, and potentially, because that number was adopted in the budget, we'll look to replace that because that would increase the cost of the forestry contract. As you're all aware, Soil and Water Conservation District has our forestry contract since, I believe, 2002. And maybe perhaps look at replacing that with contingency funds for this year and then budget accordingly for 2020. So we'll talk about that some more and bring you an update.
Thank you, everyone, for your reports. Next up on the new business, the resolution that's on your desk, extending appreciation to Governor Andrew Cuomo and the Department of Corrections on the decision to preserve the correctional facilities in St. Lawrence County. Motion by Mr. Forsythe, second by Mr. Haggard, Mr. Fay, Mr. Reagan, Mr. Lightfoot, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Leader, everyone, Kelly, I believe. Everybody on board? Okay. Mr. Haggard.
Yes, I would like to be added as a co-sponsor of the bill, please.
Certainly.
Resolution.
Yep. Okay. Mr. Arquette. Okay. And Mr. Burr. Okay. To the resolution. Mr. Reagan.
Ms. Kurt also wanted to be added to the as co-sponsor.
Yes. Speak to that, Mr. Reagan.
Yes. I think many of us have been waiting over the past few months to see what the governor was going to do. In March, this board passed a resolution unanimously asking the governor to remember the promise that he made to Ogdensburg back when he was running for governor. We also, in that resolution, pointed out the important role that the prisons here in St. Lawrence County, both in Governor and Ogdensburg, play both in providing jobs and the benefit that they provide to the state of New York by being one of the most cost-effective operations where the inmates have some of the highest graduation rates from vocational programs and educational programs, and have one of the lowest rates of incidents involving inmates on inmates or inmates involved with officers. The professionalism of the employees of the Department of Corrections, whether they're in the educational program, in the vocational program, in the security services, in the administration services, and in the maintenance services, are outstanding. We have some of the best, one of the lowest absentee rates, and you know, I could go on and on with a lot of the criteria that have been looked at that have shown how efficient the prisons in Northern New York are. One of the things that I was very happy about, in addition to the fact that our prisons will remain open, is that the governor chose to close one of the prisons in New York City. Lincoln Correctional is in Manhattan. It borders Central Park. It sits on some of the most valuable real estate in the world. The state now will have an opportunity to redevelop that property, and if they market it, if they do sell it, they could make, you know, close in the tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for that piece of property. One of the points that we made in our resolution in March, and that others have made as well, is that as New York State looks at what prisons to close, they need to be looking at not just what prisons are most efficient and what prisons give the state of New York the most bang for their buck, but those prisons that if they close can still become an economic asset. If you look at any of the prisons in Northern New York that have been closed in the past several years, you'll see that it's been a disaster for the communities where it's happened. You know, those prisons are still sitting empty. They are eyesores. They are creating problems, and they will continue to cause problems. And if one of the prisons in St. Lawrence County had been chosen, not only would it have resulted in a dramatic increase in our unemployment rate in this county, but it's doubtful the property, the prison buildings would ever be redeveloped into any useful purpose. So, anyways, you know, I urge all of you to join me in thanking the governor for sparing our prisons and commending him for doing something important for St. Lawrence County. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reagan. Anyone else? Mr. Arquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't agree with Mr. Reagan more. And as we're all aware, the ink is still drying on the agreement between Alcoa and your power authority. I wish the governor's team is responsible. It's just a direct indication of, you know, what some of us feel or we hear time and time again that we've forgotten about the problem. This is
Thank you, Mr. Arquette. Anyone else? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We have our interim emergency services director, intrepid and inspirational. News heavy for us, Mr. Zimmerman.
Push the button. Opted to go up to the river this afternoon, understanding that the wind was going to rise around 2 o'clock. ran into a couple of folks up there, one a longtime resident of Chippewa Bay and some camp owners on Blind Bay, all of whom said, and I would agree, having observed the river, that the water levels are now at or above the 2017 flood levels that were experienced a couple summers ago, in particular with the driving winds out of the west. Lake Ontario water levels are more than 2 meters higher than Lake St. Lawrence at this time, and Lake Ontario continues to climb. Lake Erie is discharging, is at record levels and is continuing to discharge. It's an unregulated flow into Lake Ontario. So I think this is going to be a longer term issue than we had hoped. I think there's the state now believes, as was identified in a press release earlier, that it's entirely possible that the flooding of 19 will exceed that of 17. I wanted to let you know that, as Ruth has told you, I guess, that the governor declared a state of emergency, including the county. We don't have any wake limits or speed limits along the river. That's something that Joe can declare, and I think, you know, we ought to have a conversation about that tomorrow and decide if that's in our interest. But water levels were higher today than I've seen them in the previous 2 weeks, and I expect they'll continue to climb despite the discharge from the river being at the highest level in that same time frame. The water pressure is just so great on Lake Ontario now. I think there's no stopping the surge. We'll have to see. A lot depends on Montreal, of course, but it's pretty significant at this point. And drove by a camp in Ogdensburg today that is completely sandbagged, but it is now an island. And 2 days ago, there was land visible, but it's completely surrounded by water at this point.
Any questions for Mr. Zimmerman?
Keith, did you see the statement the IJC put out earlier today?
Yes. I would note the IJC has been very good about maintaining communications as opposed to 2 years ago. They are routinely now and aggressively managing river flows to balance those flooding impacts. They're also taking the long-term view, and as you know, we're now into manual control of the river. We're beyond the H14 threshold for automation of the control system. So that change in flows are occurring multiple times a week.
They said in it that the flooding problem in Montreal had subsided because the crests on the Ottawa River had receded. And it appeared to give some hope to that they may,
be able to increase flows.
Yeah.
The IJC has a very informative website that shows the relative water levels at various component communities. The biggest challenge, in my opinion, looking at those charts, is that, you know, our water levels that are about 74, 75 meters above sea level, Montreal's port is at 8. So they're really almost impacted by tidal influences at that point. There's very little room for the river water to escape Montreal rapidly. There was a diminishment, and that was the reason they were able to push up the flow rates twice over the weekend. But despite that, our river levels have continued to climb. So I'm grateful that that's happened, and I'm hopeful they can increase the flows some more, but I'm just letting you know that there's a 2 meter differential between Lake Ontario and Lake St. Lawrence at this point, and all of that water at some point has got to come through here. So whether they can release it fast enough to keep that from becoming worse or not remains to be seen, but it is hopeful that they can do that given the Ottawa River has receded.
I would also just echo Dave's remarks about the need for to consider a speed limit because a lot of the property owners are very concerned and worried as the water not only, reaches those high levels, but when they get the wave action, it can be even more devastating.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that discussion. I was just out there taking it all in. But I think the time has come to do that as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Keith. So next up is a discussion about time clocks.
So This topic has been raised a couple of times over the last probably 2 to 3 years about an interest in looking at this as an option. The county at this point doesn't have a timekeeping system in this manner. We do have entrance by swipe badge in some departments. It's not universal. But in places like the courthouse, it's still key entry, and there's no record of entrance or exit. So there was an interest raised by legislators. I wanted to bring this to you. I have solicited some input from other counties. They're willing to share some policies for information. They have everything from a biometric time swipe system to the swipe badges to the fobs like we will be using for the courthouse just for entrance in the future, but wanted to get some feedback from your perspective, your experience. I think that's mostly where the interest in this has come from. We don't have necessarily a discipline issue that's prompting this discussion. We handle that on a case-by-case basis, but I wanted to find out if there's an interest from the board in pursuing what the options are for the county, if it's something that we should be interested in, and how the board would like to proceed. Ms. Bigfoot?
Any questions for Ruth? So, Mr. Perkins, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'm very interested in seeing this done. I think it's long past due, and not for any reason that anybody's abusing it, but it's just the norm. So I'd like to see it. I wouldn't mind the biometrics if it's not too expensive. I think it'll save a lot of money in the end.
Do you have any idea about the cost in the proposals that you looked at from the counties?
I don't have proposals, just the vendors that
they
use.
Yep.
Okay. But I mean that the reason to bring this to you is it should be it's a policy decision, so it certainly is a board decision to be made and mine to implement if there were interest in doing it. And before I headed down any particular road, I wanted to get your input and your interest in doing so.
Mr. Lightfoot.
Well, I too would be interested in taking a look at it, and I think the devil's in the details. You just went through 4 or 5 different ways that this could be accomplished that I think we need more information about, number one. And number two, the cost is definitely a major consideration in how that's going to affect our ability to pay for something like that. So what I think is we need to know what's out there, how it works, what it would cost to initiate it. Is there an ongoing cost that would be associated with it, for maintenance, upkeep, programming, whatever. And what we would expect as far as a saving is concerned, matched up against what the cost is going to be.
Mr. Reagan.
I would also like to hear from the representatives of the employees as to their perspectives on this. We've got St. Lawrence County is very lucky to have outstanding employees, and I don't think we need to create an issue if there isn't a problem. I think we should consult with them.
They have been noticed that this is a topic the board might consider, and we certainly would include that as part of the process.
Mr. Fay.
I think we need to look at this. One of the things we really got to look at is the cost benefit relationship. And this is a real life issue. Usually, we
Mr. Arquette. Mr. Burke.
I go back to the day's presentation.
Mr. Sheridan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I used to work for this county years ago, back 30-some years ago, I guess, and for the probation department and the Department of Social Services. And I, at that time, unless things have really changed, never heard of a department head that wasn't able to handle people who may be occasionally late. In fact, I didn't ever hear of too many people that were ever late, especially in my departments. If you were late, Don Kitchen would have called me, or Bill Collins, or Francine Peretta, some one of those people. So you wouldn't want to be late very often, but maybe things have changed. But the other question, so I guess I feel that if it's not broke, let's not fix it. The other thing is, I wanted to know, have you, Ruth, this goes to you, have other counties that you know of implemented this system?
Yes.
And do you know which counties they are right off the top of your head?
Well, I have some right in front of me. I know that most recently, and actually our current district attorney worked in Franklin County when they implemented it. Tompkins, Yates, Madison, Steuben. They're, you know, a wide range from all over the state.
All
so,
over.
Yes, I could certainly solicit some more information. I got some vendor names, and really I was asking, you know, what type of challenges they faced with implementation, because I think, you know, certainly I share your concerns, and we are moving into the year of contract negotiations as well, and that's a challenge. But delivery of the communication of it is what's important. And I didn't want to go too far down that road without the board having a discussion about it and making sure it's an interest, at least to gather information to find out if it's necessary for St. Lawrence County.
Well, I would say one of the questions we'd have to ask us, is it necessary, is what has triggered this to the point where we're bringing it up now? And is there an ongoing problem that I'm not aware of that is happening for people not showing up on time and so forth?
First
or leaving
part,
early?
No, the first part is legislator's interest, okay. And the second part is I'm not aware that there's an issue beyond case by case, and that's managed through all of the bargaining agreements processes.
Okay. Well, I can remember last fall there were an awful lot of us going around saying it was a great job that has been had by all here with bringing that, with getting our budget back in line and being on, and not fiscally on that, not being on the fiscal concert or on the fiscal list from the controller's office, and there was the financial picture was really looking good here for us, and so I know we thank people like you, Ruth, and we thank the legislature. We thank the department heads, and I think we thank the employees, and so I think that this might not be the right time to be raising that issue with our employees, considering we've just been patting them on the back quite heavily here just in the last year or so. So that's my opinion.
Anyone else? Mr. Denisha.
Yeah, I guess I look at it a little bit differently. As Mr. Arquette, worked in industry for a number of years. I'm not going to say how long, but you know, I look at the time clocks. Not any other. There's, you know, obviously, you can deal with tardiness with a time clock, but I also look at it from a safety point of view. If we were to, you know, in today's world. You know, we never know what's going to happen. And if there was some catastrophic event that occurred, we don't have any idea who's here and who isn't here. So that's the way I look at it. And I think it's as much of a, it's more of a safety, it's maybe not more, it's, but it's as much a safety issue for the county and for the employees, probably more so than a tardiness issue.
Anyone else? Rick, do you want to respond? Or? Okay. So, I will respond. You know, it's not looked at as a disciplinary. It is an industry standard. it's a measurement of data. We're always talking about data, not having data or anything else to measure things. And certainly, I think when it comes to recording times, comp time, and those type of things, that's a little fuzzy. Certainly, in talking in the audit committee today, Malecki would definitely welcome that. It would be helpful. Some of these counties had the Muni system also.
Munis, yep, and it integrates.
And it integrates. So I think we can look at the cost-benefit. I think Mr. Fay is right on the money. If it costs a fortune and we aren't really going to see that much of a benefit, and it's going to be a real upheaval, I think that collectively we can make that decision. You didn't get any actual feedback from these counties about
issues
that are continuing on, or
nope.
Talk about savings or anything like that,
nope.
Or cost?
Not at this point, no.
So how do we want to address it? Do we want to do a straw vote here? Is actually, if you want Ruth to continue with the analysis, look further into this or not? Okay.
Straw vote.
So all those that are interested in further pursuing this to actually get some information from the counties and do a cost-benefit analysis, please raise their hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Lost my place. Okay, next up is executive session.
Yep.
And we have a need for all four categories.
Nope, just negotiations.
Just
negotiations.
So just three negotiations. I'm sorry, Mr. Denisha.
Old business.
Yes.
I'm sorry, old business. That's, I didn't mean that by the way. Except for the really old stuff. Go ahead, Mr. Denisha.
Actually, it's new business. And I'm sure everyone got the got an email a week or so ago. And the sender was KnowBefore. KNOWBE4.
Yes.
And it talked about clicking on this link to take security training.
Right.
So, being of suspicious nature, I called the board office and talked with Rebecca. And I said, hey, I got this email. I don't know if it's legitimate or not. It didn't look legitimate to me. And I said, I'm not going to click on a link until. So she talked with IT, and she said that it was indeed legitimate.
It is legitimate.
So you all fail. No, I'm just kidding. I can speak to that if you like, Larry.
Thank
so
you.
KnowBefore training is one of the cybersecurity aspects that IT's adopted over the last year for county employees. And so often you'll also get the occasional spoof email that if you click phishing, you get, good job, you recognized it. It isn't required for legislators to take it, and as I understand, in the communication, there were some legislators who got dumped into a distribution list, not all. That's been corrected. Certainly something that you're welcome to take. It has, I think, about 8 or 9 sections to it, just to educate, remind you of things that you might see out there, when emails arrive in a certain format that you're not expecting, how you might respond, or what you might do. Certainly you're welcome to spend some time doing that, but it's not required.
Should we ask for a couple volunteers, test cases?
To run through it?
To run through.
It sounds like we have a couple. Some passed, some might not. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. So it is legitimate. All right. So we any other old or new business? So a motion to go into an executive session for negotiations.
Litigation and personnel?
Not litigation. Negotiations, personnel appointments.
Okay. Negotiations, personnel appointments. Moved by Ms. Curran, second by Mr. Arquette. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're in executive session. Strategically.